sharp, pointed, and insightful. This is Stacy on the Right on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Every Democrat that I've worked with for about 10 years now has agreed to funding for barriers slash walls on Obama's watch, on Bush's watch, and all of a sudden, it's a bad thing on Trump's watch.
Not one single time, George, has Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer put a counteroffer on the table except a dollar. Nancy Pelosi said a dollar. That's not serious. We all know that.
When people start coming back and saying, we tried to get across, but we couldn't, or even in the news, it starts getting out that there's a border wall and other measures in place to keep people from crossing, it'll discourage them from coming.
Governor Northam is trying to get support from lawmakers to make big changes on gun control. Some of the ideas include universal background checks, a ban on assault weapons, and also bringing back to the table Virginia's one handgun a month law.
We had a great conversation. We were talking about Israel and securing Israel and lots of other things. And it was a great conversation. I'm not keeping anything under wraps. I couldn't care less.
And now, Stacy Washington.
Well, you know what? I can't even begin to express how crazy it is that we're still seeing the government shutdown go on and that the Democrats are reveling in that. But hey, it's Monday. We're here. We're grateful to be here. And we got to give glory to God for just the fact that we're all still making it, doing what we do. And that includes being here on American Family Radio, Urban Family Talk. Thanks for joining the program. Go to urbanfamilytalk.com, also AFR.net. I know we are in the planning stages of the second annual marriage conference, which was the inaugural one was last year in the fall. Different dates this year. So I just want to give you a heads up and ask you to keep your eyes and ears peeled. We hope to see even more people there, meet more of our just trusty, fantastic, amazing listeners, and to get the opportunity to spend time with you and to just fellowship and share like we did last year, but at an even greater level. So we're so excited about doing the conference again. I can't wait for our planning meeting that's coming up. We're going to be talking about that, and it's going to be super, super informative. We're excited about doing it, and we're excited about seeing you again. So first off, good girl with a gun. I love these stories, not because someone is, you know, obviously the end result is that one person ended up being injured. But I love it because the woman who was alone at a bus stop in a kind of shady area of town at, you know, 5:50 in the morning, apparently, waiting for a bus to go to work. She's standing out there by herself with a big, you know, she's got her puffer jacket on, her hood's up. She's just waiting. She wants to get on this bus and get to work. And then someone steps in to try to change her circumstances. And she was having none of it. It's number four.
Surveillance video shows the victim standing at the bus stop, apparently on her way to work just before 6 this morning. The camera mounted across the street outside a drugstore. Moments later, a 19-year-old man can be seen in the picture. Police say he showed the victim a gun and tried to rob the 25-year-old woman. There is a struggle, and she is knocked to the ground. But she turns the tables and shoots the man once in the neck.
All I heard was pop.
Really?
I'm like, but this is normal for around here.
Cedric Dumas says by the time he came outside, police were already on the scene and had crime scene tape around the bus stop. Neighbors say this can be a dangerous area and many women carry weapons to protect themselves. The victim in this case, according to police, has a concealed carry permit.
He got what he deserved. He ran up on the wrong person. So she did what she had to do.
In the surveillance video, the man can be seen running away around the corner while the woman runs across the street. Police took the man into custody down the street. This afternoon, detectives were searching that area. The man, meantime, was transported to a hospital where he later died.
He forgot that people around here carry guns, and you will get popped. And he got popped.
Well, police questioned the 25-year-old woman with the concealed carry permit. They have filed no charges, though they say the investigation is continuing. Meantime, the medical examiner's office has not released the name of the 19-year-old man who was killed.
So this is the video doesn't actually show, the video on their website doesn't actually show the whole thing going down. What it does give you, it gives you the surveillance video from the business across the street, I think it was a pharmacy, it gives you the view of her standing there and the guy running away. It doesn't show her actually, you know, defending herself. But she was injured slightly in the scuffle. And, you know, she was definitely, if it hadn't been for her being armed, the story would be reading quite differently today. So I stress, as always, to consider personal self-defense, your personal safety. Consider getting trained. Consider taking some courses. We took a date safe course, the girls and I. Obviously, I'm married, but the girls spend time, you know, they go to youth group, and our older daughter is in college. And so there are situations where guys are going to be around, and the date safe course, which is given through Thrive here in St. Louis, it is a fantastic course. It's phenomenal. And I knew it was going to be good, but I was surprised by the depth of information that was given out that night. It was a very fun environment, and it was just shy of 2 hours long. And they had a couple of the moms that I actually know from other things were the ones who set it up at their church youth group house. They have a little single family residence adjacent to their church where they hosted it. And so we went. I didn't know what to expect, except that it would be some training. I've seen the trainer on our local TV stations and networks talking about giving this class. And so when we got there, I expected it to be good, but I was kind of blown away by the level of information that was given and how good it was. And so it's not that, obviously, I'm not looking for any of these things to happen. I don't want anything like that to happen. But being prepared is actually saying this could happen, so I'm going to do something about it. So I think it was fantastic that we were able to take that training. And they have other classes like that in cities across the country. So you can always get a little bit of training for just using mace or pepper spray, keeping that individual one with you in your purse, et cetera, et cetera. So, and of course, praying before you leave the house. I can't tell you how important I think that is. I think it is so important that, you know, when you're just headed out, just pray about it and then go on about your business. But obviously there's something else that goes along with this. She was in a bad area of town. They'd had a lot of assaults and robberies and muggings in that area, which is why one of the eyewitnesses that you heard in the piece said, you know, everybody around here carries guns because they're tired of getting robbed. And if you do something, you're going to get popped. He was kind of stating, you know, the obvious, which he felt like this guy should have known. So good story. So I did lead off with this at the beginning of hour one of the program about the State Department approving 8,482 child bride requests. So you might just be sitting there thinking, what in the world? So first of all, I'll give you a little statistic that you may not, I just don't think you're believing this. Like, you're listening to this. I was reading it and I just was sitting there like, I just don't believe this. 167,000 children under the age of 18, some as young as 12 years old, are legally married in 38 states in America. 167,000. Children under the age of 18 are lawfully married in 38 states, some of them being as young as 12. So that sets the stage here. Between 2007 and 2017, the U.S. State Department approved 8,482 child bride requests, which it's an adult who's living in the country lawfully, who wants to bring into the country lawfully a minor spouse or fiancé, or it is a minor living in the country lawfully, petitioning the U.S. State Department to bring an adult spouse into or fiance into the country from abroad. This is reporting that's been gathered, researched, and brought to us by the Associated Press. Additionally, U.S. government approved 204 requests by minors to bring in their minor spouses and fiancés. So this is minors bringing in other minors. In nearly all the cases, the girls were the younger person in the relationship. In 149 instances, the adult was older than 40. And in 28 cases, the adult was over 50. So remember, we're talking about a girl under the age of 18 bringing in a spouse. In 28 times, it was a man over the age of 50. And in 149 cases, it was a man older than 40 married to a woman younger than 18. And our State Department said, yeah, come on in. Bring that into our country. Let's normalize that. Let's bring it in. No problem. Some of the examples cited included in 2011, immigration officials approving a 14-year-old's petition for a 48-year-old spouse from Jamaica to come in.
Another time, a 71-year-old man was approved in 2013 for his 17-year-old wife from Guatemala to come in. He's 71. I hope you're not eating while the, I mean, it is after lunch. God bless you. But guess where the majority of these requests came from? Mexico, followed by Pakistan, Jordan, the Dominican Republic, and Yemen. Middle Eastern nationals had the highest percentage of overall approved petitions. The information was initially gathered by the Senate Homeland Security Committee after a request was made by the State Department. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican from Wisconsin, said this indicates a problem. In his letter, he and his former colleague, Senator Claire McCaskill, said our immigration system may unintentionally shield the abuse of women and children. As the report indicates, these child bride requests apparently are legal because most states allow 16 and 17-year-olds to marry with parental permission. Now, remember, these are laws that were enacted back when a 17-year-old person was working a full-time job and they, you know, you were either finished with school. There were plenty of situations initially where a 16 or 17-year-old was a full-blown adult. Nowadays, where 18 is the age of majority, and we keep kids at home and on our insurance until they're 26, this seems kind of ludicrous. Now, I can see where a parent who has a child who's outside the house and is acting like an adult at 17 and wants to get married to another person in their age range, and the parent feels like, well, I already have lost control of this child. They're not living here. I might as well give permission so that they don't have to be out of wedlock with all of this stuff and doing that. But that's totally different from situations where you have a 14-year-old or a 12-year-old petitioning to have a 48-year-old or 50-year-old man come from another foreign country and be an American citizen so they can marry them, or they're already married to them. That should not be lawful here. You should not be able to say, I'm 14 and I'm married and I want to bring my husband over. They should say, you have to wait until you're 18. You'll be all right. Just wait till you're 18. So children under age 16 can marry in the following states: New York, Virginia, and Maryland, provided they get court permission. Now, there's a lot of people who are really disgusted by this, including myself, but people who are fighting against this. And so Frady Rice fights against coerced marriage through the group Unchained at Last. And she told the AP that data from New Jersey show that nearly 4,000 minors, 4,000 of them, mostly girls, were married in the state from 95 to 2012, including 178 of these girls who were under the age of 15. The report also noted the case of Naila Amin, who is 29 now, but was 13 and living in Pakistan when she was forcibly married to her first cousin, Tariq, who was 26. Amin was betrothed to Tariq when she was 8 years old and he was 21. My passport ruined my life. She has dual U.S. and Pakistani citizenship. She said, people die to come to America. I was a passport to him. They all wanted him here, and that was the way to do it. I was a child. Why weren't any flags raised? Whoever was processing this application, they don't look at it. They don't think. And I'm sure there are so many other women who, after living this horrifying arrangement, have then gone on to either have their freedom or possibly just they're still there, and they're wondering the same thing. Why would our State Department normalize this kind of behavior? I mean, who cares what individual states like Maryland and New Jersey are doing? How about just the good common sense that a 12-year-old girl cannot give consent, nor can a 14-year-old girl? This is not a place where you have a child who has a fully developed decision-making center where they can decide if something is good for them or bad for them. It's such a disgusting bit of news. And, you know, with everything else that the president has going on to try to fix, we just have to add this to our prayer journal, that we would have good, clear-thinking people working in the State Department who would stop making these approvals and stop allowing this to proliferate within our country. I mean, come on. All right. When we get back, we're going to be talking about this whole idea that President Trump is a Russian agent. Here's a hint, he's not. Stay right there.
The Ministry of Preborn meets abortion-minded women right where they are. When a young mom sees her baby on ultrasound, she's 80% more likely to keep her baby.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
This mom chose life for her baby.
She's been such a joy. Her name even means rebirth and sort of being raised up from the ashes. I now see my daughter, and I cannot imagine my life without my happy, lovely, joyful, smart baby, and I'm so grateful.
Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Pastor Rick Steadman asks, is it reasonable to believe that God exists? He says that it is because of zombies, superheroes, music, sports, and science. That is the premise in his book, 31 Surprising Reasons to Believe in God. He begins his book by telling a true story of a family on rural property in Northern California. They found a rusted can by a tree. They ended up finding 8 cans containing 1,400 gold coins worth an estimated $11 million. Asked if they had any clue of the treasure, they realized in hindsight seeing a tin can tied to the tree where the wood had grown around the can. There was a clue to the treasure, but they just didn't see it. Rick Steadman says that we have many more clues of God's existence, and we often do not see those. For example, our culture has this fascination with superheroes and fantasy movies. You would think that in a society that has become so secular, popular interest in supernatural heroes would have diminished. In fact, our current interest illustrates the spiritual longing within all of us. In his section on yearning for a better world, he talks about how even non-believers believe human trafficking is a vile evil that must be stopped. This provides common ground for discussion, and it challenges the secular idea that all morals are temporary and inventions of culture. Our universal rejection of such evil argues for a transcendent standard. In another section, he talks about the glory of the universe, mathematics, and the scientific method. Each of these, in different ways, argues for something more than the natural world and point to the existence of God. This is a book that will encourage your faith, but it is also a book you can give to your non-Christian friends who have never thought about the clues around them that point to God. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For more information about issues covered on Viewpoints, visit pointofview.net. Pointofview.net.
Welcome back to Stacy on the Right on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
I'm not going to go New York Times stories, but I'll certainly say this, that the notion that President Trump is a threat to American national security is absolutely ludicrous. Margaret, I've answered this question repeatedly, indeed on your show. The idea that's contained in the New York Times story that President Trump was a threat to American national security is silly on its face and not worthy of a response.
Whoa. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for being here today on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. You're listening to Mike Pompeo saying that it's a silly, ridiculous, ludicrous idea that the president was a Russian agent and it's not even worthy of a response. And I think he's totally dead on here. The reason why we're seeing this resurrected is because someone decided that Democrats are losing the war on the president when it comes to calling him a Russian colluder. And in not mentioning it and letting it kind of pass by and go by the wayside, they're missing an opportunity to demonize him even further because they don't like the shutdown. They're blaming him for that. But they also don't want people to forget that he's some kind of foreign person. He's not one of us. He's working against our country. Now, we all know that's just garbage. And it's why we have to continue to pray for the president, for his strength, for his fortitude, and for his protection. But it is interesting that this new narrative has kind of reared its head as the shutdown stretches on and they're losing the kind of messaging battle on that, because most Americans are saying, it snowed 10 inches in Missouri and blah, blah, blah. And wait, what'd you say? Our wall's immoral. I had a fence around my property. My house is comprised of walls and floors and ceilings. What are we saying? What exactly are we saying? So that's not working. So they want to kind of deflect over to this Russia thing. We want to deflect back to it. Now, Jake Tapper is on the bandwagon. He apparently got the email with the talking points, and he's going to, you know, push it home to the just let's get it done. Jake Tapper says to Senator Johnson that you need to condemn President Trump on Russia. And Senator Johnson was having none of it. It's number five.
Well, again, I don't want to go speculate beyond the fact that I know he's burned by leaks in other areas and he's pretty frustrated by it. So that might be one explanation. But otherwise, I really can't comment further. I mean, in the end, I'm going to judge this president based on his actions. As you said earlier, we have increased sanctions. We have begun providing lethal defensive weaponry as well as training to Ukrainians so they can defend their territorial integrity. The jury will be out on other actions this president will or will not take. So in the end, you just have to, you know, basically judge him on his actions. We defeated basically ISIS. We've taken away that caliphate. You know, we were all concerned about a precipitous pullout. Now that's going to be conditions based. We can certainly attack ISIS and continue to attack them from positions in Iraq. So, again, I will wait to see. But I've seen pretty strong actions on the part of this administration against Russia. They realize Russia is a threat. And I think we have been, by and large, responding to that threat with strength and resolve, which is what we need to do.
And that's all we can do, right? Remember President Obama and his comments to Russia. CNN had on their homepage this morning, I just flipped over on my phone, just check it out. What are they saying? They have a picture of President Trump standing next to President Putin and, you know, a little headline about him working for the Russians. But we've seen President Obama very chummy with President Putin. And other previous presidents have been chummy with not just him, but previous presidents in Russia. It is not abnormal for us to have relations with the nation state of Russia. It's also absolutely something that we saw President Obama wasn't concerned with, which is stopping their cyber attacks, keeping up to snuff with what they're doing online and stopping them from their incursions. The other thing that's been really interesting to see is how much attention has been paid or not paid to the fact that Jim Comey lied about whether or not there was a counterintelligence investigation ongoing about the president. He knew there was. He kept that information from Congress, and he only reported on it when they called him on the carpet to bring him to testify before them. I mean, these are like the minutiae that you kind of forget. You're probably happy to forget it. I know I certainly was until I read about it this morning. We're kind of happy to forget about James Comey and his mealy-mouthed, like worm tongue way of testifying about things. He acts so superior. He sits there and he's hunched over to one side with his legs crossed. And the way he talks to the congressmen and the senators who want to question him when he goes in to testify, it's like, well, yeah, same answer. I mean, he just tosses his kind of, he's got a really condescending, negative, almost putrid disdain for people who are elected as opposed to him, where he got hired into a job and rose up through the ranks and he's accountable to no one. And you can tell that's what he thinks. He's just like, I'm not accountable to you. I'm James Comey. You know what I'm saying? I do what I want. I'm James Comey. Really, bro? So there's this other story out there, which I thought was pretty interesting. The New York Times, hardly a conservative paper, is reporting that the FBI retaliated against Trump for firing James Comey. I mean, it's just like every time you think the story can't get any more swampy, it can't get any murkier, it can't get any more like dirty, then they come out with something else. They're like, oh, by the way, don't forget. This Friday expose from the New York Times reveals that the FBI investigation of Trump for alleged treason was little more than a retaliation against the president for lawfully firing an incompetent and ethically challenged FBI director, which I told y'all, I remember talking about this on the air. It was actually, it was a while ago. I remember talking about how as commander in chief and any CEO, any executive, the higher up the person is that they're interacting with, the more likely it is that if that person displays any sign of disloyalty, that that person would the CEO, the hiring manager, whoever it is, would want to get rid of that person. And the reason is because the higher up the executive is that's reporting to the CEO, CFO, CIO, whatever, or the commander in chief, the higher up that person is, the more power they have to influence and directly harm the work effort of the person that they're ultimately working for, which is the head of the company. That's why CEOs choose so carefully when they're looking at people to head up huge divisions or departments in their companies. President Trump didn't have the opportunity to choose his own FBI director because James Comey was already there. But it stands to reason that a man who's run a multinational corporation that is highly successful for 60-some years, you know, he's been working since he was a teenage boy, would be able to recognize almost instantly that James Comey was uncomfortable around him and did not feel loyal to him. And that at that moment, his instinct would be to fire him immediately. But because this is government, he had to do it the roundabout way. Excuse me. Perennial dry throat because it's been snowing. I know that doesn't make sense, but I think anyone who's ever hired someone or anyone who's ever worked at a company where high-level people interacted and you were nearby, you would be able to tell. My analysis holds weight. There was an opportunity for James Comey to say, I don't like President Trump, but I like being the FBI director. And I know there's been some untoward goings on, but I'm going to straighten up and fly right because I want to stay here. I want to keep leading the FBI. I think there's still more work that I can do, more good work that I can accomplish. And if he had done that, I sincerely believe that he would still be there, not because President Trump liked him, but because it was better to keep him, cheaper to keep him than it was to let him go. Now, I don't mean forever. I just mean at least through the first 2 years of President Trump's tenure. But James Comey wasn't there to try to do something for the American people or to do something for the FBI. He was there as an operative on behalf of the Democrats and Hillary Clinton. He did not just lack loyalty to President Trump. He lacked loyalty to the entire administration and to the FBI itself because his actions brought shame and horrible consequences in the public eye for all FBI agents. This is like when you talk about someone making a choice at work that negatively impacts the organization, normally a company would say, you know, they call you in and there's somebody out from HR at your desk, cubicle, office, and they're packing your stuff up. They got boxes from, you know, paper boxes that are empty. They're packing your stuff up. You're in the HR office thinking, I wonder what's going on. Or I know what's going on. I hope they're not planning on firing me, or I got some dirt. I'm gonna make sure I go out of here with a bang. And you're in there and they're out there packing out your desk. And so in a situation like this, it would normally be, we're going to give you 3 months severance, or we're going to issue you your balloon payment and you're out of here. You're done because you're embarrassing the company. And there would be no negotiation. It's just, you're out of here. The question is, are two security guards going to haul you out of here under your armpits, or are you going to walk out of here under your own steam? Just grab your boxes on the way out because we've already packed out your stuff. Put your key card on the table, your keys, put your, you know, company laptop, company phone, put it all on the table, and let's sign these papers so we can get you out of here. These are the things that go on every day around the country in major corporations, tiny companies, you name it. It happens. I have heard enough stories from people that I know who work at places like this, these corporate environments, to know that sometimes when the axe falls, the person is literally like, they will call in sick because they're actually sick and miss their own firing and come in the next day or a week later, whenever they've recuperated, to find some other person, a temp at their area, or some coworker of theirs managing all of the projects that they were in charge of. And they will get told in the HR office the day they return because they need that key card. They need the secure items back. This happens. And if the U.S. government was a normal corporation, what would have happened is the first time that the president took James Comey to lunch and James Comey was uncomfortable and shifting in his seat and couldn't look him in the eye and had a really, like, you know, worm tongue demeanor, President Trump would have had lunch with him and then he would have sat down with the people in HR and said, what does it look like letting this one go? He's got to be out of here. And who do we have that can take over his duties until we find a replacement? This one has to go. It would have happened immediately, but we're talking about the federal government. So you have President Trump going out to lunch with James Comey and inviting him to meetings over and over and over again, trying to win him over and feel him out. To like, are you really against me? Are you really working against me? I'm the president of the United States. He's trying to take James Comey's temperature, and James Comey is shifting, you know, like a kid who's got ants in their pants. He cannot sit in Donald Trump's presence. Why? Because he's his enemy and he's been working against him from the moment he declared he was going to run for the presidency. And any person with any people skills at all can tell when they're sitting in the presence of someone who hates them, or someone who has their ill intent towards them, or has not their best interest at heart, or at bare minimum, someone who is not loyal. Sure, there are people out there who can fake it, and they're sociopaths, by the way. They're psychologically malignant, but there are people who can fake it. But for most people, if they don't like you, it's coming out. It's seeping out of the pores. And James Comey is one of those people. And he displayed that to President Trump. And President Trump had his hands tied. He has to put up with this guy all these times. Every time they meet, James Comey is typing out little memos in his sedan, his FBI sedan outside the White House, typing out memos and saving them after having what essentially is a classified meeting, because he's meeting with the president of the United States for work chat. And all of this is going on. And Democrats would have us to believe that Donald Trump was completely oblivious to the fact that he had an FBI director who was not just loathful towards him, but possibly was working against him and his administration. And then it's supposed to be this big deal that he fired him. I'm actually, after watching Donald Trump on his TV show all those years, me and my husband used to watch after the kids went to bed, it's actually a shock to me that he waited that long. I don't understand why the president didn't just let him go in the first 30 days. As soon as he was inaugurated, he didn't just meet with James Comey and be like, oh, wow, this guy is not for me, and then just let him go. But oh, no, James Comey's a Republican. I mean, there was all this, it was meant to paper over his true intentions, all of that media attention about how honorable James Comey was and how he's a career public servant, how he's a Republican. Dude was not a Republican. Not if Republican means what I think it means. So in addition to all of that, what I just recapped there, you've got this New York Times article that says that the FBI's surprisingly flimsy justification for launching a retaliatory investigation into President Donald Trump was without evidence. There is no actual evidence for their probe into whether Donald Trump worked for the Russians. FBI officials instead cited their foreign policy differences with him, his lawful firing of James Comey, an alarm that he accurately revealed to the American public that he was told he wasn't under investigation by the FBI, which they lied about. So the sitting president of the United States says, am I under investigation, to James Comey? And he says, no, you're not. Well, he was. He totally was. So Democrats are using this article to, the news. They're using this as a bombshell. He's been under investigation. Our FBI has been investigating him for working for the Russians. When in reality, all of this is based on, guess what, piece of garbage? The dossier. So remember, the dossier is a piece of opposition research created and paid for by the Clinton campaign. Hillary Clinton wanted oppo research on her opponent. This is not abnormal. It's not illegal, but it's not to be used by intelligence agencies to launch investigations. Because if that's the case, I got a binder from an old campaign I worked on. Let's launch some investigations into any old person. If that's the standard, you just need an opposition research binder. How many staffers who've worked on a campaign of any kind, gubernatorial, all the way up the line, have an opposition research book that's been put together by a bunch of trackers and people who are, they're looking for dirt. And they put the information into a binder and then you read through it and the comms people use it to create talking points. When they ask you about this, you make sure and point out that your opponent did that. When they bring up this item that you're in favor of for legislation, if you win, make sure and mention that he's not in favor of it because this is what he was doing in his personal time. He's got a problem with DUIs, drug abuse, extramarital affairs, yada, yada, yada. Don't use this, some of it red tabbed. Don't use this section unless, like, this is the break glass in case of fire. Only use this in case of, like, the campaign's going down the tubes, then you can use this. Meanwhile, the American people are like, oh, the president's being investigated because of Russian collusion? So I guess he is guilty. No, he's not. He's still just as innocent as the day is long. When we get back, we're going to talk about an illegal alien killing police officers. Stay right there.
Yo, yo, what's up?
Hey, what's
nothing
up?
Much, man. Just trying to listen to this last song for the music final.
Yeah, I think I'm going to fail for the most part. I haven't even listened to it.
Ugh, yeah, me neither. I've been too busy listening to The Word on the Street.
The Word on the Street?
Wait, you guys haven't heard?
Not heard of it.
Not that one. Well, check this out.
There is only one true word, and that is the Word of God, which is what you will hear on Word on the Street, hosted by me, Victory McIntosh. Tune in as we discuss some of the latest hot topics and life issues and filter them all through the Holy Word of God. It is possible to live righteous before the Lord and enjoy doing it. Tune in Saturday mornings at 9 Central Time. You don't want to miss it.
Help her in her time of grief, Father.
Thank you, Father.
Give her strength, give her guidance, and help her realize that you are there with her.
Intercession is a unique form of prayer. It's praying on behalf of another individual.
Pastor Joseph Parker of the Hour of Intercession.
Our prayer life is to not consist only of praying for ourselves and our own families, but we're to pray much for the needs of others and the world.
Listen weekday afternoons at 1 Central here on Urban Family Talk.
I found myself in jail, too intoxicated to remember what happened that night. Another inmate had mentioned Teen Challenge. I gave my life to Christ, and this is the place that helped me lay a new foundation.
If you or a loved one are struggling with addiction, Adult and Teen Challenge can help. There are centers across the country, and you can find the one nearest you at 855-END-ADDICTION or at teenchallengeusa.com. This is Urban Family Talk.
Securing America.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who's been traveling in the Middle East, addressed several areas of concern on CBS Face the Nation Sunday. He said the drawdown of U.S. troops from Syria is underway, but America isn't backing away from Iran's terror threat.
Those are all real missions. The tactical change we've made and the withdrawal of those 2,000 troops is just that, a tactical change. Mission remains the same.
He said that includes retrieving detainees in Iran, as Navy vet Michael White has been since last July.
We take the security of every American, wherever they are traveling in the world, as one of our foremost priorities. We will continue to work to get each of them back.
Pompeo said as part of his time in Saudi Arabia, he'll discuss their alliance, but the death of a journalist will not be ignored.
The murder of Jamal Khashoggi was outrageous, and we'll hold those responsible accountable.
But he said the benefits of the Saudi partnership will also be discussed in his meetings. Gernal Scott, Fox News.
You can download episodes of Stacey on the Right from the podcast page on AFR.net or UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Now, back to the show on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
I hope on Monday what we'll see is finally Washington coming together and opening up the government. What that's going to take is for the Democrats to move off the position that they've been taking so far of no compromise, no movement, their extreme position, they've got to be willing to give in on. The president has said over and over again, I've been in the room when he said it, that he's more than willing to compromise, he's more than willing to meet in the middle. The reason we have a shutdown is, let's go back to December. In December, the then Republican House passed funding for the entire federal government. It included $5.7 billion for an additional 234 miles of steel barrier. When it got to the Senate, Chuck Schumer and the Democrats filibustered that bill. Every Democrat said, no, we will not allow the government to be funded so long as they're building even a single mile of barrier. That's why we have a shutdown, and that's not a reasonable position. And the president's position has been, he's perfectly happy to negotiate, to compromise. Yeah. He said many times, doesn't have to be $5.7 billion. He could find some other number, but the Democrats have said no. The only thing they're willing to consider is 000. That is not reasonable, and that's why we have a shutdown.
I mean, can it get any simpler than that? You recognize the voice there of Senator Ted Cruz from the great state of Texas talking about why there's a shutdown at all. If they voted for $50 billion on different occasions in total, some parts, you know, snippets, whatever, previously, then what would be the reason why they couldn't do the same thing right now? We have quantifiable evidence. I keep getting these cool videos and things sent to me in email, some of it by other people kind of working in the field, you know, think tank folks, et cetera. And even some of them will say, well, I don't agree with the wall, but the walls do work. I mean, everywhere you look around the world where a wall has been put up, even if it's a 12-foot fence with concertina wire across the top and three rows of concertina wire on the side that's outside of the border, the illegals approach it, they see it, they realize it goes all the way around, and they don't come anymore. Because it's a waste of time. They're not going to go up against razor wire to get into the country. They're not going to cut themselves into ribbons. They know, well, we'll just go to a country that doesn't have a wall. It's pretty simple calculation. So we have the same thing going on. Wherever we have wall, the illegals avoid it like the plague. They go to the open areas. They're not going to the border points exclusively, the lawful entry points, because that would be if you're doing an asylum claim, and that processing means that you're going into the system, but they're still not getting background checks. They're not getting the, the medical screenings and the healthcare screenings. And that's dangerous to us here in this country on a whole other level. So this story that I'm going to talk about now, is this police officer. His name is Ronald Singh, and he is a police officer who was killed by an illegal alien the day after Christmas. President Trump has called and spoken to the widow. They have a 5-year-old son. And the brother, Reggie Singh, actually went on Fox and Friends and just talked about his brother and losing him and how the little boy now has to grow up without a father. He was waiting for the son to walk and talk. He'll never be able to see that. And this is all going on in the context of this shutdown. And I don't understand how anybody could say that this isn't destructive to families. A little boy living, and we've talked about this. We've gone into the family ramifications of illegal immigration. It taxes the resources. People who should be paying one amount of tax, families are paying higher taxation, and their kids are in schools with kids who they not only don't speak English, they don't speak a form of Spanish that the dialect that we have here in this country. So the English as a second language industry is just exploding. And that is detrimental to classroom learning. Everyone not speaking English on day one means there's a group of kids who you have to slow the pace of the classroom down. And I know that this is the truth because for our kids, we could tell the difference in years where there were more talented and gifted kids in their classrooms. A couple of the years that our daughter was in elementary school, she was in class with a small pod. It was like, I don't know if the parents asked for them to be in the classroom together or if the administrators did it intentionally, but those kids being in the classroom meant that the teacher had to be snappy with it to keep their attention because they were on the smarter end of the spectrum. Everyone else in the classroom picked up on that and the pace of learning increased. I promise you they got more than one classroom year of instruction done that year. And it happened another year where there were a group of those kids in the classroom. Our younger daughter tested into the little talented and gifted thing. And she was in it's like they would group a few of them together and have them in the classroom. And it was just fascinating to see the kinds of things that the teachers who they've already learned how to deal with all of the different learning styles and all of that. And they would use these different methodologies of keeping those kids learning and engaged and entertained and in new content while also taking care of the other kids who were working at the normal pace. And this is in a AAA rated school district, one of the top school districts in the entire state of Missouri, where we knew our kids were going to get a good education. But it was still interesting to see how the teachers approached that. Now, reverse the situation where the kids in the classroom, they could be as smart as a whip. We don't know. They don't speak English. So everything has to be spoken to them in their language. But you can't pull them out and have a Spanish-only classroom, number one, because they don't all speak traditional Spanish as we would know it, as people are learning in Spanish 1 and Spanish 2 and Spanish 3 in high school, but because also that would be discrimination to pull all the kids who don't speak English out. They have to be mainstreamed into the classroom, which means everyone has to slow down so they can have their lessons read to them in a foreign language, and then they can ask their questions in a foreign language, and then they can, all that can be converted back into English. The inefficiencies there are astounding. And they really point to this idea where we're basically saying, whatever is the least efficient way of getting anything done, we're going to do it that way because that represents the way that has the least amount of quote, finger discrimination. And I'm saying that sitting here just as black as I can get. Like, you know, I'm a black person. So I have concerns about discrimination, sure. But the discrimination that I'm most concerned with has to do with American families being subverted in favor of families that want to be in America but don't care if they're here legally. And the idea that we're ignoring the needs of our own population and instead preferring the needs of a population that should not be here. So it's really, it's just a terrible story here for the Singh family. The Stephen Siller Tunnels to Towers Foundation is now trying to raise enough money to pay off the family's $300,000 mortgage. And they're just 50,000 short of that. Well, and that's from this story here. They might have already reached their goal. And he says they came here to live the American dream. Let's show them the greatness of America and take care of this family. Reggie Singh, the brother of the fallen officer, has described the fundraising effort as a huge relief for him and his family. The illegal alien suspected of killing Singh, his name is Gustavo Perez Arriaga. He has had his case delayed until he gets a mental health evaluation. He's set to return to court early next month. And this all happened in the sanctuary state of California. If we were able to turn this suspected killer over to immigration, we wouldn't be having this interview right now because Officer Singh would still be alive. Talk about a devastating result to that young family. You know, he says, you'll see vast numbers of vehicles driving through the desert and entering where you don't have any fencing or wall. A wonderful young police officer, I spoke to his wife yesterday where he was shot, viciously shot for simply stopping a person that came over the border illegally. He got shot and killed and took the most beautiful picture hours before he'd been with his wife and child taking a Christmas picture and then went out to work in his uniform and got shot by someone who's in the country unlawfully. You know, I don't know how anyone can defend that. I don't know how anyone can not recognize that it not only destroyed the Singh family, but it is destroying families across the country who they're not going to have their story told on Fox News because they are not in law enforcement or their story just isn't going to make it to the mainstream news outlets. So there's that. We got to have the wall. We got to have it. And there's no way around it. There's just no good reason not to have the completion of the border wall and all of the other things that the president is asking for. So right now we're in the final moments of the show. I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a preview for the remainder of the week. Tomorrow, we're going to be speaking to John Gabriel, editor-in-chief of Ricochet. And then on Wednesday, we're going to have Angie May, who's the director of the AFA store, coming into the show to talk to us about the AFA store and the products that you can buy there. Thursday, we're going to chat with Brandon Darby. He's a wonderful friend and he has such a passion for stopping human trafficking. He's going to be talking with us about immigration and border security. He's actually the director of Border and Cartel Chronicles Project for Breitbart News. And he's been cataloging all of this for a long time, since before it was ever a big story. And so it'll be a pleasure to speak with him and get an update there. And so there's all of that. Just so much going on there. And I think it's just kind of obvious that there's a desire to deflect away from the border story, that it's not a winning story for the Democrats, and that the shutdown isn't going the way they'd hoped, that they thought Donald Trump would have buckled by now. Where are you, person who buckles at the knees when you don't get the people don't buckle to you. It's not working because it's just so sad what's happening to Americans. And I think as more Americans become aware of what's happening, they're going to be on the side of law and order. You have to think to yourself, if you're on the side of illegal aliens coming here and, you know, all the crime and everything that's going on, you have to kind of wonder to yourself, what am I going to get out of that? Like, advocating for lawlessness, what's that going to bring me? And so, you know, the other headlines for today, I told you about the Democrats, 30 of them being in Puerto Rico with 109 lobbyists. They were down there for the weekend. Also, story kind of update on some we had a couple segments on this. This PG&E chief executive is leaving, and the utility is actually preparing for a possible bankruptcy filing, which kind of seems a little unfair that they would get to get away from everything by doing that, but we'll see what happens. And then another story that I thought was pretty interesting, Megyn Kelly won in her fight with NBC. She left with $69 million, which is the total that they promised to pay her. This 3 months after she was cut as the host of the 9 a.m. hour of the Today Show. And she has a total of $69 million, which was the full amount of her contract with NBC. Apparently, the contract that she wrote was an ironclad, you know, it doesn't matter whose fault it is. If I leave, I still get paid type contract. And so she's getting paid. She was only there for 18 months. And they weren't actually balking at paying her the astronomical salary amount that they'd agreed to. They wanted her to sign a non-disclosure agreement about the network and its staff. They don't want her out there talking and telling her story about how she was treated at NBC, which tells me she was treated pretty badly. I know a lot of people kind of have a negative taste in their mouth about Megyn Kelly because of her treatment of President Trump during the debates. But I just still remember her days on Fox News and how great things were, her hard-hitting questions for Democrats and how she was able to get people on there. And it was a really good show. And I know she's not going back there and those days are past and yada, yada, yada. But it just, to me, it's such a sad story of someone who she just had the best job and she let it go. And I don't know why I just feel so sorry for her. Not like, oh, you know, poor Megyn Kelly, but just that even with all that money, her passion is doing television, journalism, heartbreaking news, political stories, talking to political types, arguing about the issues, getting facts out of people. And I don't know how she does that now with just, it's kind of like this scorched earth path that she's undertaken. But we've seen comebacks from far worse positions than this. And I just can't see her at her age going with her, you know, millions into oblivion. I just can't see it. Although you have to think, after all the paparazzi, she's probably going to be really glad to have some time where people aren't paying attention to her, where she can just kind of meld in with her family and just not be the source of attention for a little bit and get kind of reorient herself and get her bearings. We'll see. We'll see what happens. And they also have this story about this news place called Caroline's. It's a comedy club, and they send out their annual hilarious holiday card with a topical wish list. And the card always begins, "May the holidays bring." And the highlights include a box of Band-Aids for Ariana Grande, reserve street parking for Alec Baldwin, and some blackface to cover up NBC's red face. Anyway, that's the show for today. Thank you for being here and for listening to the program. God bless you from the heartland. We'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of Urban Family Talk, Urban Family Communications, or American Family Association.